Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Everybody's talking this week about the pioneers of the 401k retirement savings plan now saying they created a monster that, with pensions almost gone, Americans just aren't saving enough, not nearly enough, for a decent retirement. That may be you they're talking about. So what do we do? This hour On Point, reimagining the 401k world. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you on track to save 8 times your salary for retirement? Do you pretend you are? Do you try not to think about it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear from a couple of those pioneers of the 401k program in this hour. But joining me first today from New York is Ben Steverman, personal finance reporter for Bloomberg. Ben, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom.
Everybody's talking about these guys, Ted Benna and Herbert Whitehouse. We'll hear from them in a moment. In the news this week for their misgivings about the 401k plan that they were influential in getting going decades ago now. But I guess a lot of this is driven, Ben, by the fact that Americans are falling so far short of what financial planners recommend for their retirements. What's the gap, Ben?
Well, you know, you could argue that the 401k has worked really well for the rich and for the upper middle class. They've been able to sock away a lot of money. Where the gap is really at the maybe bottom half or bottom 75% of Americans who are either not saving at all because they don't have a 401k at work, or they're saving just puny amounts that are barely going to be able to cover like a car payment when they're retired.
I mean, I'm looking here at numbers that say about 45% of all households currently have zero saved for retirement. Zero.
Right. And the statistics are really scary when you look at baby boomers. You have baby boomers, like two-thirds of baby boomers don't have their annual income even saved for retirement. And these are people that are going to be retired in the next 5 or 10 years.
That's pretty wild. And, of course, pensions out the window for most people now. That was once what people looked to as a pillar of retirement. Now, a very, lucky minority look at that. Ben, what about this number? It says here, I'm reading that financial experts recommend people save at least 8 times their annual salary to retire. Is there a consensus on that? What's the math? What's the thinking that goes into that recommendation?
Well, another way to think about it is to think about saving about 10 to 15% of your income over your career. Now, you might have some trouble doing that at the beginning of your career when you're just starting out, and you might be able to catch up a little bit at the end, but 10 to 15% consistently throughout your career should get you where you want to go if you're sort of a middle-income person.
Where is it that you want to go? Is 8 times your annual income about what you need if you want to live off of a combination of, I guess, Social Security and some interest, though that's been pretty low lately, and maybe some drawdown on the principal itself? Is 8 times a reasonable goal?
I think that's a reasonable goal. I think that it's a little complicated because some people have very very modest lifestyles, and they're actually saving a lot of money as they go through life. And then those are the people who, when they retire, are actually going to be set pretty well. But the problem is with people who have sort of expensive lifestyles, or it doesn't even have to be expensive, they have low incomes, they're living beyond their means, and when they get to retirement, they can't cut, or they have a really hard time cutting their spending. And in those cases, 8 times might not be enough. So it really depends on what your goals are for retirement and you know, frankly, whether you're going to be able to get by on Social Security or not.
I mean, which is a pretty lean soup to get by on. I can imagine people thinking right now about what they've got saved and their income and whether it comes close to 8 times. We've got numbers on this, though, as well. I'm looking here for people who age 50 to 64. So they're already in the window where this should be very much on their minds. The bottom half of earners in this country have a median income of $32,000, and their retirement assets, $25,000. So not even 1 year's income. The middle 40%, They earn, on average, $97,000. They've saved $121,000, you know, barely more than the equivalent of 1 year's income. You said you're talking about the rich and the middle class, but the top 10%, 10% in this country make $250,000, and they've saved about $450,000. Now, that can sound pretty decent, but that's not even twice their income, Ben.
Right. Another way to think about it is, if you're sort of at the top of the scale and you want to have a sort of a sustainable pot of money to carry you through retirement, the problem is you could live to be 90, 95, 100 very easily. So you need to kind of keep that money there. And you've got to think about maybe taking out 4 or 5% a year at most. That would be more like 20 times, you know, your spending at least. Maybe not your current income. That would be more like 20 times. So that's a huge challenge even for upper middle class people to hit those numbers.
That's pretty wild. And then there's the question of how much younger people should be saving. And again, we're looking at the 401k. This is the company's not doing it for you. Who knows how many companies you work for in the course of a lifetime? There's not a pension accumulating here. It's pretty much on you. I'm looking at a report from an outfit, a finance website called NerdWallet. I don't know what you make of them, but they say that a 25-year-old earning $40,000 a year will need to have saved 22% of pay in a retirement account over the course of his or her career to replace 80% of their annual income by age 67. I mean, who can afford to save 22% of their income, Ben?
I think that stat sounds really high to me. One of the things that hopefully we will all have when we retire is Social Security. And for lower...
Will we? Earners, really? There's so much skepticism about that.
There is. But if it's not there, then you have a situation where about, you know, half or more of retirees just don't have any major form of income at all. So the great thing about Social Security is that it does replace income for people who are really at the lower end, if they've contributed enough years, and if they don't tap it too early and then hurt their benefit. But if you're able to work those 35 years into the Social Security system and hold out to maybe 66 or 67 to tap it, then you're okay if your annual expenses are only $20,000 or $30,000 a year. But if you make more than that, you need to supplement it.
Boy, so leaning back on Social Security just at the same time when people are saying that's in big trouble, and we see what the numbers are and are not for what people are actually socking away with 401ks and more. Ben Stiefelman at Bloomberg, thank you so much for being with us for a minute today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I want to go to a man who's called the father of the 401k. Remember, once upon a time, people looked to pensions that came from corporations. Not everybody had one, but many, many people did, many more than now, certainly. 401ks emerged as a way for individuals to save on their own, sometimes with matching money from their employer for retirement. Ted Benna is often called the father of the 401k. He was instrumental in thinking through options here way back in the late 1970s when he was working with Johnson & Johnson. He co-authored 401ks for Dummies with Brenda Watson Newman back in the day. Lately, he's been quoted all over the place saying, well, maybe he created a monster and maybe we need something new or different. Ted Bennett joins us from Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania. Ted, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, Tom. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's so great to have you. Way back in the day, when you were promoting more usage of this, of the 401k, did you imagine, Ted, that it would become the main pillar of American retirement?
Well, the fast answer to that, since we have limited time, is certainly no, Tom.
So it was appealing, though, because did you think that pensions would go on and people would supplement that with extra savings through a 401k?
That's a really tough issue that takes a lot of time, Tom, but the defined benefit system started to die prior to 401k and for reasons other than 401k.
Okay, defined benefit as in pension.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started in that side of the business, so I used to sell pension plans. But it became impossible once ERISA was passed, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act 1974, to sell pension plans because the roles for them tightened up to a point where companies no longer wanted to set them up.
Yep.
And they began to die off. And that's going to continue. You know, the whole defined benefit system is in serious financial trouble of its own, yeah. which is a whole different topic that yep. you know, we're not going to have time to begin to tackle.
Yeah, so pensions, companies having trouble sometimes delivering on their pension promises. But you're quoted all over as having begun to say a ways back now that with the 401k, eventually you feel like in some ways you created a monster. What do you mean, Ted?
The thing that really bothers me, Tom, is what has happened investment-wise. 401ks originally were very simple in terms of investments for participants to deal with, and the expenses were reasonable. But I'm in the process of writing a book right now, my fifth one, and during that I've traced the history of what has happened on fees, and that frankly just got me even more disgusted than ever how we've gotten to where we are today. And I have an idea I'd like to throw out here in terms of something short term here that could be done to give participants a better opportunity. And the issue, Tom, here is one that applies to 401k, IRAs, yep. 403Bs, 457s, which are all different types of individual retirement accounts where participants have to pay the cost of investing, and they're paying way too much.
When you talk about fees, you're talking what big companies that help them or make those investments for them are charging to take care of that money.
Well, it's them. It's all the services around it. It's the investment advisors who are involved in the process who get paid significant amounts of money. It's the whole shooting match.
Are you afraid that we're in a situation where we're going to end up looking at a generation or more of Americans who are, you know, reduced to pretty darn tough circumstances once retirement finally comes because of this, Ted?
We are because of this and the fact that all of our retirement systems are in pretty serious trouble, whether they're public, private, pensions or defined contributions like 401k. Tom, what we need to avoid really big-time problems here is a robust stock market and a strong economy, for another 10, 20, 30 years, without a repeat of 2007 and 2008. And that's not very likely. It's never happened historically, and I don't think it will in the future.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is NPR's On Point. We're talking this hour about 401k retirement savings plans just not working out for many Americans. The pioneers, the creators of the 401k, now saying we need something new. And some longing to have good old-fashioned pensions back. Good luck with that. You can join us this hour. Do you have a 401k? Does it look like it's going to support you in retirement? Does it even look close? Does it look like a joke? Do you have a fixed pension and feel darned glad you do? Are we, as a nation, just pretending that 401ks have us covered? We've been joined from Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, by Ted Benne. He's often called the father of the 401k. Go all the way back to the late 1970s. He was thinking about all this. He's thinking about it even today. Joins us there from Jersey Shore. With us right now as well from Orlando, Florida, is Herbert Whitehouse. He led the team at Johnson & Johnson that introduced the 401k to corporate America. He's still working today in his 60s and thinks he may have to work till 75, I read recently. Director of Legal Services at ABC Fine Wine and Spirits. Herb Whitehouse, thanks very much for being with us.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You and Ted are getting a lot of coverage these days. Wall Street Journal writing up that you guys lament the revolution that you started. Did they get it right, Herb? And what do you regret about how 401k has evolved?
Well, I think the evolution of the 401k has been good, actually. And the lamenting shouldn't be about 401k. It should just be about how long it's taken to make the 401k work for Joe Bolt, the average worker.
I mean, if you go back to when you all were watching this change in the late 1970s, almost 40% of Americans had a traditional pension. Today, only 13% of private sector workers have that. Do you think people were better off when they had old-fashioned pensions, Herb?
Well, it depends on who you are. If you are a young person who changes jobs, you're much better off with a 401k. And in fact, if you're a company like ABC here, the company I work for,
yeah,
we have a 401k plan that matches 50% up to 10, and it's actually designed to encourage people to save that 10%. So if you save 10, you get 5, and if you do that for a career, you've got quite a lot of money.
When you think back to the days when you and Ted were early on thinking about 401k and how it might be applied, did you anticipate that pensions would go away, that 401k would move in and become the primary savings vehicle, Herb?
I did not, at least in the large corporate realm. Defined benefit pensions are complicated. They take some resources just to administer. So, but large corporations all had defined benefit plans, and you were looking at replacement ratios, and you were looking at if somebody works a career at Johnson & Johnson, what will they get? And let's look at their Social Security, let's look at their defined benefit pension, and let's look at the 401k, and if they're a high-paid person, let's look at how much they can save on their own outside of that. And so, yeah, we didn't envision the defined benefit, at least I didn't envision for large corporations the defined benefit pension going away.
But it surely has in so many places.
In many places it has, right? And people are talking about Social Security is at risk.
Ted Bennett, you're listening in there. What do you think the primary sort of flaw was as this rolled out? Was it the high fees that you've pointed to even now that you find so upsetting? Or was it human nature that, you know, leave the responsibility to individuals and they may simply not save what they need to save for that retirement, Ted?
Well, the world's totally changed, Tom, you know, from where we were 35 years ago, as kind of Herb is touching on. And so, you know, I'd kind of prefer to address it in terms of where we are today.
Okay.
Yeah, where we are today, certainly for workers going forward, they have to rely on their 401k, and obviously getting them to save enough is the first step, which is really critical. But then a large part of what they could otherwise be building is being taken away from fees that in many situations are just, you know, outrageously way beyond what they should be. And, you know, I'd like to throw out a suggestion on that.
Okay.
And that is, you know, short term, there's an easy way of creating competition here for the private sector, and that is to allow 401k participants, IRA investors, 403b and 457 participants to be able to put their money transferred into the Federal Thrift Savings Plan, you know, which is a pretty super program run for federal employees that is, you know, just dirt cheap in terms of expense to investors, particularly compared to what they're playing in these other programs.
But that would mean opening that up somehow or expanding that so it would be available as in effect for all Americans, Ted?
It would require legislative action to open that window for, you know, those individuals to be able to put their money into that system as an alternative to what they have available in the private sector.
What do they tend to pay all in for fees compared to those outside that system?
Well, from what I read about their program, it's under 0.1%. And in, you know, many 401k plans, 403bs, 457, and IRAs, individuals are paying more than 2% a year. That is a phenomenally huge difference in terms of, you know, what individuals will accumulate by retirement.
Herb, as you're listening to that, and that is a gigantic difference in fees, and it's pretty upsetting to think that the federal government can pull it off for such a low cost and everybody else is potentially paying such a high sort of fee plateau there. But is that enough, Herb, given what we've seen about the many people who just don't save anyway, even if you have low fees? Is that a system that's going to float most Americans' boats, Herb?
Well, you can reduce fees even without going to a national system. If there's a fiduciary of a 401k or 457 or 403b plan out there that's paying 2%, he belongs in ERISA jail. ERISA doesn't cover the public sector, but nobody should be paying 2%, and nobody should say to the employee, it's up to you to invest in these funds. I'm going to pick high cost funds. You have to put them together. A lot of what's happening is that the costs are going down. Fiduciaries are recognizing that. And also fiduciaries are saying, fiduciaries meaning the people who manage these plans for the employees, like a trustee, are saying that we have to do more like the older brother of 401k, the defined benefit pension fund. And we have to give the worker a portfolio that works for them because, you know, Joe Bolt can't figure this out. You know, the way you set up a portfolio for a defined benefit pension fund, even in a simplistic way, is you look at capital market assumptions for return, correlation, volatility.
Yep.
You make a basketball team that works together. You don't have all center forwards or all Curry guards. You make it work, and the average person can't do that. But now the tools are coming together so that at a low cost, the average person can have a portfolio and the kind of advice that only wealthy people used to have. And that's a real advantage.
How do you make sure that advice gets into their hands? Are you talking software here? Or are you talking just turning your money over to one of these, you know, I'm going to retire in 2040 funds? Or how do you make sure they get that advice?
Well, software is a part of it. That's what makes it affordable. But you typically have vendors out there. Here we use Transamerica. There are others who have this kind of advice, giving portfolios, telling people how much they should save if they want to have a sunny retirement. Do they want to be conservative or aggressive? And they take into account all the assets of the person, and these tools are starting to work, and it's not always easy even to get somebody into a plan. You know, you can have a 10% 50% match on 10 or 100% match on 10, and still some people won't do it. But it takes some work to get them to do that.
In the meanwhile,
it's true. That's one of the problems is that when somebody's young, they don't think about retirement. But if they were in a defined benefit plan, they would be getting a value of maybe 0.25% of pay. Some companies are getting 5% of pay.
Yep. Ted?
Am I allowed to do that?
Yes, please.
Yeah. Hey, I've been through all this stuff, and I helped launch Investment Advice. Investment Advice was originally introduced to give the kind of help Herb is talking about, at $10 to $15 a year for a participant.
Okay.
And the investment community hijacked it. You know, I helped get Department of Labor to release a pronouncement permitting advice to be made available. Investment community hijacked it, used it to add another layer of fees rather than reducing fees. And, you know, the answer to this is Herb's dancing around it. You know, I've done it. I've taken plans where I've eliminated the structure that is typical that he's describing at Transamerican. I've removed all of those layers, and I've moved the plan. You know, at that level, that type of plan typically will cost anywhere from 75 to as much as 200 basis points. You know, I can move a plan, and I've done it, to, you know, Vanguard, put everybody into target maturity funds, that costs less than 20 basis points. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. That's, you know, that's the kind of answer certainly that is needed, because it gives participants the right mix of investments without having to deal with all this other nonsense and expenses. You know, short term, that's where we need, you know, we need to go. You know, longer term, you know, addressing the lack of participation, under contribution, and so forth, and a, you know, major overhaul of the system is going to take years and years. But, you know, there is something that could be done short term here to provide competition in the marketplace by allowing individuals to put their money into the federal thrift savings plan and compete with these overexpensive private solutions in this particular instance. You know, the framework's already there. It doesn't require changing anything other than making a portal open for individuals to have that option.
Of course, that would have to be legislated, I assume, and I can only imagine that those the existing businesses who are profiting on this are going to come in there leaning pretty hard against that as a cheaper option. Ted Benna, Herbert Whitehouse, please stand by. Pioneers of the 401k. Teresa Ghilarducci joins us as well right now from New York, professor of economics, director of the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis at the New School for Social Research. Teresa Ghilarducci, welcome back to On Point.
Oh, hi, Tom.
You have worked on this for a long time as well. There was a time when you imagined everybody would be making or ought to be aiming for a 7% return, and a whole lot of people haven't shown up with that. Is this about bringing fees down, or is it about a bigger dynamic here of people just not interacting well with the kind of 401k vehicle, leaving us with so many people headed toward retirement practically naked?
Fees are a problem, but that's not the biggest problem. These plans are not well designed. And for the past 10, 15 years, the reformers have tried to redesign the people with financial literacy and more education and fancy pamphlets and even more advisors, as if the people had to be fixed. They spend too much on lattes. They don't know what's good for them.
Yeah.
And what we need to do is design a system for the people that we have now. And there was a time when people were more secure in retirement, and people really haven't changed that much. What has changed is this experiment, you know, has really ended its course. We now have found out that a voluntary, individual-directed, super hyper-commercial system doesn't work for the bottom 90% of workers. It does work well. I think it was Ben who said that for the top 10%. You know, I could give you lots of numbers.
Yep.
The tax system, you know, favors them. They get a big deduction. Their employers tend to contribute more. If they have a spell of unemployment or income volatility, if their income falls by 10%, they really aren't affected. They keep on motoring along and saving. It's really the bottom 90% of us that are sensitive to periods of unemployment. When we have to roll over our 401k, we're completely frozen into, you know, what plans to do. And we don't save our entire career. And it's not because we're flawed. You know, we're all flawed. It's just because of our circumstances. I'm fascinated by Ted Benna's proposal, you know, and the politics of it and the economics of it. But it's, he wants to just address the fees. And there's a big problem with participation. You know, all of us have to participate in saving for our own retirement when we start working. The Social Security system is automatically takes money out of our account,
yep,
and it kind,
yep,
of accretes, and we get credits, and it works. When people are in defined benefit plans, even though they may have found their career job, you know, around their 30s, they didn't have to think about it. So we have to have a system that's automatic, immediate when you're, you know, from your first day at work. So his TSP problem, you know, proposal really gets to some part of the problem, but we need a much bigger, bolder solution.
Herb Whitehouse, I know I have to let you go in just half a minute here. If you could go back and wave a wand from the beginning, how would you make it different, Herb?
Well, I think some of the things that Teresa mentions should have been done a long time ago. And part of it was people were afraid that the laws would punish the fiduciaries if they did. So putting people in the plan automatically, it's called automatic enrollment, putting them in the right portfolios, all of these things that are being done right now. And there's a lot of good that's being done. It may take some time. It's too bad it wasn't done 35 years ago.
Herb Whitehouse, an early pioneer of the 401k. Herb, thank you very much for joining us today. Really appreciate it, from Orlando.
Okay, you're welcome.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interests in mind. Rocket Mortgage provides a transparent online process that helps you understand all the details of your home loan. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the right mortgage solution for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about 401k retirement savings plans just not working out for a whole lot of Americans. Pioneers, creators of the 401k, a couple of them have been with us today saying, we need something new here. We need a change. Ted Benn is with us. He's called the father of the 401k. He worked with Johnson & Johnson way back in the day when all this was just emerging. He's with us from Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania today. Teresa Ghilarducci is with us as well from the Center for Economic Policy Analysis, the Schwartz Center at the New School for Social Research. And you can join us this hour. What do you see out there? What happens when all those boomers and well beyond hit retirement and there's just not enough cash in the 401k kitty? Have you got a better way? Let's hear it. What's in your 401k? Ted, Teresa, lots of response online here. We've got, Rachel says, my husband and I aren't saving between the high cost of living and childcare for our toddler. That's just it. Bruce says, 401k is a disaster made to prop up a false market by deaf and dumb and blind investors, cannot write off losses like real buyers. Jay says, my pension is awesome. That's a fact, Jay says. Let's go to Dale in Manchester, Tennessee. Dale, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Ted and Teresa.
Hi.
I'm kind of at the other end of the spectrum of what a lot of the talk has been at. I am retired. I retired in the summer.
Okay, good
and,
for you.
I'm kind of affected by the issue from the first hour, no longer possibly going to be able to buy insurance at an affordable rate.
Health insurance, yeah.
Yes, health insurance. And the situation I'm in, I mean, I've lived cheap and saved really hard.
Yep.
And with my wife, we've done quite well. Everything's paid for. Two houses, actually. One's being renovated. But
good for you.
It's a pretty good picture. And I'm anxious. I'm fascinated with, like Teresa, with the notion that I could get off the train here and not have to worry about the market. I never liked the market. I did not get a lot of the market gains. I just, you know, saved 22%. So I got at least 8% of, I mean...
Eight times annual.
Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I would like just a guaranteed income for the rest of my life, like a pension offers. And I had a pension also. And it's $1,300 a month. It's nothing great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's for 20 years participation, so I don't know how great a pension can be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I could have taken a cash value out of that, but that's how conservative I am, and I just don't like being in the market. I don't like the exposure to the ups and downs. I just want a guaranteed income, and it can be, you know, 50 or 60% of what I made when we were working.
Just guarantee it, and you'd feel better. Teresa, how about it? I mean, a lot of people, especially in the big Great Recession, felt the sting of that market downturn very strongly and have come out feeling like a lot like our caller Dale. Just if I could just have something steady the way a pension was, even if it wasn't as big, what about the volatility that people face even when they're very near to retirement or in it?
Yeah, most people don't like it and they shouldn't like it. Individual households were not meant to take the hit of financial risk because they have to actually manage their mortality risk, you know, how long they're going to live. That managing that kind of a risk only happens in a pooled situation. That's what insurance is for. You know, it's pensions and Social Security that guarantee a modest but sufficient stream of income for the rest of your life. So, you know, I have proposed with my writing partner, Tony James, a guaranteed retirement account. Actually, I've been proposing this for the last 10 years. It's a little different than everybody getting into the thrift savings plan, the federal government plan, okay, because that's just a well-managed 401k where people still have to choose their own investments and it's not guaranteed. We can go policy, we can go incremental, but the first thing we have to do is get everybody into a plan, and we have to actually take away this fiction that people can, you know, manage their own money and manage their own risk. It's as if we had a national policy that everybody had to pull their own teeth or do their own electricity. You know, it really is a it requires pooling and it requires expertise. And this idea that individuals can do it has cost them their retirement futures.
What's the difference then between your guaranteed retirement account and Social Security?
Well, Social Security is pay as you go. So we workers put in money and it's paid out almost immediately, you know, to current retirees. A guaranteed retirement account would be a supplement to Social Security, be a lot like a pension where we save and it's invested in a pooled fashion, and then we get it out from investment earnings. It doesn't require ongoing, you know, taxpayer contributions. So we need both. Every country has both. They have a pay-as-you-go system, and then they have a occupational pension, mm-hmm, you know, right on top of it. But nobody has.
Every country except us.
Nobody in the world. Yeah, nobody in the world really has this dependence on these individual financialized accounts that expose our workers to investment risk, and we expose them to sort of financial risk. The investment risk is that you have a bad broker and you pay way too many fees for really bad investments, and then you're just exposed to the overall market.
Ted Bennett, you're called the father of this thing. Was the fundamental idea flawed, that for the population at large, people should be managing their own investments and taking their individual risk rather than pooling, as Teresa says?
Well, I agree with everything Teresa's saying. There's no way of arguing with it at all. And, you know, obviously, we need a major overhaul of our whole retirement system. And that's what she's addressing. That's really big. You were talking when I was throwing out the idea of just opening up for individuals to at least have the opportunity for a better result within the existing system. That is a lot easier and simpler to do politically, potentially, mm-hmm, which is why I threw that out as opposed to what Tricia's talking about. But, long term, I agree with her completely.
Let's go to our callers.
Your caller, let me just make one point here that he may have thought about, and that is obviously he can get guarantees. You know, you can either get a guaranteed income annuity. I'm not a big fan of annuities, and I'm totally not in favor of variables at all, but there are fixed income annuities that pay a guarantee similar to CID. They've got some gotchas. You really have to be careful and know what you're doing. But, you know, you also, of course, can get a guaranteed lifetime income stream. You need to, you know, work with people you can trust to explore going that route. But, you know, certainly one thing for him to consider is taking part of his nest egg, separate from the defined benefit pension, and locking in some time of lifetime guarantee. And, you know, there are even creative annuity products out there today where you can buy something called a longevity annuity, where it promises to pay you, you know, if you live to age 85 or whatever, the rest of your life. You can pick a starting point at which you buy the guarantee. So that's something certainly to think about that might provide the opportunity to sleep a little better.
Teresa, what is it about our country, our culture, that leaves our citizens vulnerable to the kind of gotchas that Ted's warning about? You got to be very careful, he says, when you buy this. Well, this is people's retirement. Should it be such a risk fraught activity to try to just have some stable, you know, income as you head into your golden years?
I really admire Ted, and it's really great and an honor to be on the show with you, Ted. You probably did not anticipate that this system would be taken over by, you know, retail investment firms. It really is a story, Tom, of the power of lobbying very wealthy investment houses, these retail money managers, that have been able to lobby Congress to get themselves exempt from fiduciary laws, get themselves exempt from fee disclosure. And the ironic part, I think it was Herb Whitehouse a long time ago actually made this point, that they take our money in fees and lobby Congress to prevent us from having those fees disclosed to us. You know, it's like a built-in oppression machine that we're paying for the lobbying so that we don't get that. And other countries do not have these powerful banks and retail institutions that we do. So that's part of the story. The other part of the story is a decline in unions. Unions were workers' advocates for retirement and their shop stewards and their bargainers to make sure that those fees were lower. Early on, I thought that unions would be sort of good managers and stewards and representatives to keep those fees down. And everything looked good on paper when the returns, you know, could be around 6 or 7%. But mm-hmm. I don't think any economist, and I am one, presumes that economic growth will be able to support shareholders getting so much more than workers. So we are expecting, most of the smart money is expecting about 4% return, 4 to 5%. The only way you're going to get anything lower than that is to have a much wider diversified set of investments, like a defined benefit, you know, a little private equity, a little hedge fund, a little real estate, you know, just much more diverse. 401ks don't get you that diversity. But I want to say a shout out for Ted's idea. Remember when Nixon went to China? A lot of your listeners are a lot younger.
Way back.
But, you know, Republicans were anti-China because it was a communist country, but it was Nixon, a Republican president, that went to China. It may be the Republicans that actually embraced Ted's idea. Marco Rubio mm-hmm. talked about it in the presidential campaign. Why don't we just let everybody go into TSP, he said. His party smacked him down. But we know from the focus groups we've done of Trump voters that retirement worries are key. Are key, even they're young or they're old for their economic worries.
The TSP, and this is the federal government's thrift savings plan with that very, very, very much lower fee structure than what a lot of people face right now. We got a lot of callers for the two of you.
Can I add something here before we run out of time?
Yeah.
You know, Herb mentioned employers being fiduciaries, and Teresa talked about that in the—
Meaning they have a responsibility to look out for the interests of the investor.
They're not doing it. I mean, flat out, most of them are not handling that responsibility well. And I got reminded of that, you know, in writing this book and going back over the history.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to the late 70s, employers, including the big ones, I mean, I'm talking Fortune 500 companies, began to make decisions that were clearly not in the financial best interest of their participants. When they went to what are known as bundled arrangements, they moved their plans from investments that were institutional with institutional pricing, meaning they may cost, you know, 10 to 15 basis points, and without mentioning the mutual fund company, they went to big mutual fund company that had basis point charges of 100. You know, retail pricing is...
Okay.
As Teresa mentioned, and I hit him at that time and said, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean, why should you be charging these kind of fees to corporate employers who are bringing you $1 billion for this, as a same pricing structure as for individuals who give you 10,000 of investment?
Yep.
At that time, their answer was, well, we have to treat everybody the same. And what happened when the big companies made that move, they took off their corporate books the cost of paying the administrative and all the other non-investment fees, which they were paying at the company level. Participants were only paying, at that point, 10 to 15 basis points to invest, and that's what started this, you know, movement down this whole slippery slope. It was employers not acting in the sole best interest of participants, which is what they're required by law to do, and they haven't been doing it.
And here we are all these years later with so many Americans just don't have it saved when the time comes, young and old. Adam in Nashville. Adam, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I know you're short on time, so just two quick questions.
Mm-hmm.
First, you talked about we need to save 8 times our annual income. Is that based on gross pay or net? Because that can obviously be a big difference.
Teresa?
Net. It's about what you have to live on. So eight times what you're going to live on. And your salary is usually your benchmark for your consumption. But if you're going to plan on living on less, then you just sort of project out what you're going to need in retirement.
But does that mean you're saving eight times like your after-tax income, something like that?
So let's say you're going to live on $50,000 per year, you know, adjusted for inflation. Mm-hmm. Then you need $400,000 at retirement.
Okay.
So eight times 50K is 400K.
That makes it sound a little more manageable. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the only the top 10% have on average 450K, you know, when they're about 60.
Yeah, yeah.
The bottom 50% has 35, but the average is zero because most have nothing. And the middle class have about 60,000 if they have anything, but most have nothing, so the average is zero.
What's going to happen when all these people tumble into actual retirement?
Great question. I think we're going to have a political and economic problem on our hands when we have double the poverty rate in our cities and states. Medicaid will go up in price. Just the moral problem of these vulnerable older people dying sooner, it is just a tragedy.
When does the wave show up, or is it out there right now?
No, it's going to start. It's the baby boomers are starting to retire now. The financial crash came at a bad time, you know, for the 72 million boomers. Not many people had time to make up for it, but most people came into that crash with nothing. No, I'm really quite worried about it, and I think maybe the Republican Congress, with Marco Rubio's leadership, you know, or whoever, you know, it might be a surprise, will have to do something about it. Or the midterm elections, you know, are going to have to face this problem.
Well, what's going
to
happen? Are we going to see mom and dad living upstairs with their kids all over the place, or lots of old people panhandling? What's coming?
Working during what's supposed to be retirement. I mean, you know, continuing to earn an income if you can.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot of desperate people back in the labor force at older ages when they're not really wanted, you know, by employers. That I just have a paper on this. This will probably suppress wages for everybody, and there'll be no impetus to improve working standards. Tom, I'd want to say I'll answer your listeners' questions through my email, so I'm open for that too.
Sure, that's great. Questions? Send them to us at onpointradio.org. We'll get them to Teresa Ghilarducci. Really interesting speaking with both of you today. Ted Benna for sort of raising the flag here of alarm about where things have gone and maybe pointing a way forward as well. Ted, thank you so much for being with us today. Father of the 401k. Thank you, Ted.
Okay, Tom.
And Teresa Ghilarducci at the Schwartz Center for Economic Policy Analysis there at the New School for Social Research. Teresa, it's always great to have you with us. I hope your vision is not, it's right in front of us now. I hope we can figure out a way around it. Thanks for joining us, Teresa.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Your questions, bring them to us for Teresa. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.